It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three. From Santa Anita, it's Big Cap Week, and the Big Cap excitement is building, especially because the Big Cap himself is here. John White, Mike Makowski on hand, Hammer, of course, and I think this is going to be a very California-centric conversation, this agglomeration of talent, Hammer.
Well, we were looking out over the denizens down here at Clocker's Corner, and of course we talked Ron McAnally, who won a couple of big caps, and with John Henry, of course, and then John White shows up with all the racing forms of the big caps that I was just mentioning, and I see over in the corner Mike Makowski over there, who has a little big cap history of himself with Southern Image. I think it was 2004. I'd just been on the scene a few years, and I didn't really know the players too much. You knew all the big names, and then this guy Mike Makowski is around. And did he won the Malibu?
Yes.
He won the Malibu, and we'll let Mike tell the story a little bit. about that, but and all along, and kind of watching you, it was, I think it was maybe your first, probably obviously big horse shot at the big time, and trains right up to the big cap and wins it, and you know, the rest is kind of history. And he's turned out to be a little bit of a sire, hasn't he?
He had a little bit of luck, you know, not as much as we'd all hoped, but you know, we had a heck of a time running him.
But you know, go us through, this is big cap week, and we're going to try and go over through as many, but kind of give us the, you know, like, look at a big smile on his face, the excitement of, you know, I mean, that basically puts you on the big stage.
Yeah, I was, you know, fortunate enough to have him, and we brought him along slowly as a three-year-old. We had a few setbacks with him, and then brought him back off the long layoff, and he ended up winning the Malibu, and we had the Sunshine Millions here at the time, and he was Florida bred and was able to springboard into that as the next race, and, you know, at that time it was a $1 million race, and set a perfect timing for the big cap, and then, you know, looking forward to it and anticipating it. Mandela had the big favorite going in there. I'm drawing a blank who it was, but he ended up having to scratch him the day before the race, and, you know, yeah, pleasantly perfect. Ended the day before the race, you know, me working for Dick as his assistant for 5.5 years, he walks up to me and he goes, "You're going to have a sleepless night tonight." And I said, "Why is that?" He goes, "Because I have to scratch my horse, and you're going to be the favorite now tomorrow." And he was right. It was, you know, it was a long, long, long night. But so it was a great memory, and you know, the connections that owned them were, it was just Don Blayhut and Tom Cagle, just were great guys, and you know, Blayhut was a big inspiration, and I owed a lot of credit to him for my career because he was very supportive of me.
And Tom Cagle is still, yeah, Tom Cagle's with still, you to the end. And
yeah, he's one of my best friends, and I help him buy horses here and there. And, you know, we do, you know, work together a lot on stuff.
Claims like CZ Rocket?
CZ Rocket. Fame? Very good handicapper, Tom. Very sharp.
And who was the rider of that?
Victor Espinosa.
Huh? And that was one of, you know, Victor had a lot of good spots here, but that was another one that put Victor on the map early as well.
Yeah, and he ended up taking us, you know, we ended up going to the Pimlico and winning the Pimlico
special.
Yeah.
I remember that. I was there for that.
Yeah, that was an exciting day. And, you know, it was kind of my first experience of shipping to a big, you know, race like that. And, you know, the atmosphere of the Preakness the next day and all that, it was a great time.
Yeah, so I just remember, you know, being here and not knowing Mike that well. And, you know, it was kind of nice to see a fresh face emerge and, you know, actually pull it off. I think he ended up being 6-for-8.
Yes.
In his career.
Yeah, he was a neat horse. And then, the whole meet was just, you know, so surreal with the big cap and all that. Just being raised out here in California and winning Sandy the Handicap is one of those things on your bucket list.
And that was still back in the day when we would get 50,000 here, and it was no small feat just getting them over to the paddock and getting them. Once they hit the racetrack, they're probably going, whew, okay, we got that.
I still
done.
Remember Trevor's call to the day, you know, when it all was happening.
What did you think of your weight that you were handed for that race by that racing secretary?
I was amazed. Everything worked out perfectly, so it was great. I had no complaints.
118. How'd that happen?
Yeah. Well, pleasantly perfect at scratch.
No, that's true. Didn't he win the Breeders' Cup or something like that? so Mike has been a trainer. We're talking about Bill Spahr ran his last horse a week ago.
Right.
And Mike trained for, 30-some years and retired a year ago or so. And now
what's it been?
2 years?
It's been 4 years now.
Four years?
Since I went to work for Fazzy Tipton and kind of their West Coast, you know, guy, and you know, recruiting and you know, things, anything we could do to get sales on here in California and you know, help, you know, get horses out here, you know, we're on, you know, we're board for that.
Yeah, so Mike's been a big part in working with the CTBA here and but working also with Fasic when we had the sales here and also at Del Mar, and you know, anything that we were trying to come up with some ideas to the California horsemen buy horses back east to get them out here and, you know, help with the shipping and things like that. So Mike's been a big help with just ideas to try to get more horses out here. And
yeah, I mean, we need to get racing strong out here in California again and rebuild and, you know, help with anything we can do to help it, you know, here at Fazzy Tipton, we will.
But big cap winner, and you know, see, I'm a big proponent. I was always a big proponent of giving like a grade one trainer, giving them a wristband. I mean, a bracelet or something that they could wear around and show off at the deal here. But you know, everyone knows here that coming up this week, we got a big cap winner right here. So it's when I saw you down there, I go, we got to get you up here.
Can I get a wristband or a watch?
You know, I'm in. I'm in. I'll put in for it. Maybe we can do some retroactive, you know, trophy presentations. You know, I'm all for that stuff. So, right. So I think, but seriously, I think like when they used to do for the poker tournaments, the guy got the band. He could walk around and you kind of show it off, and you know, hey, people ask, what's that for? But I'm going to get that done somewhere, somehow. I got the guitars done at Kentucky Downs, and we give away surfboards here. At least I can do is try and get a bracelet.
I miss, and I think a lot of fans miss, is the old cups with all the previous winners on there. They always give away the turnstile.
Right. Kind of neat. The mugs. Neat.
I still have some from, you know, that and actually the Sunland Derby. When I won the Sunland Derby, I got some from that.
Yeah, well.
Should mention about Sunland had to cancel mid-card yesterday. And
right, yeah, I saw that because they had to preps for their Derby in Oaks there.
Yeah, they got the severe weather for a little bit.
There's been severe weather. It's been hounding most of the states around here where I guess but our stuff has gone east, so I think we're good for a while, right? We'll knock on some kind of... Got to be wood around here somewhere.
Little rain coming in this week, but early part.
Yeah, they called off the jam, right? It was supposed to be... In fact, I was hustling around the other day looking for an alternate spot here in case it rained up in the Baldwin Terrace, and luckily we don't need it. But anyway, great to hear the Southern Image. We'll catch a couple more big cap winners through the week and get them up to tell their stories. But I always remember that because I kind of was like, wow, it's great to see a fresh face. You know, pull it out. Right?
Exciting times. All right, well, thank you for having me.
Mike McCaskey, and I brought up the California with Boyd Browning just a few weeks ago. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. To borrow a line from James Taylor, I've seen fire and I've seen snow here at Santa Anita, because I've seen the majestic San Gabriels on the backdrop of Santa Anita on fire, and today we see them on snow. And by the way, Mike Makowski here with Southern Image, it was Marcelo Polanco who finished second with a filly in that race, Island Fashion.
Sure.
Who that ran a heck of a race that day.
And Island Fashion, the filly prep at Sunland yesterday that... Yeah.
She ran a terrific race in defeat that day. And, of course, Marcelo Polanco nearly pulled off that huge upset in the Breeders' Cup Distaff last year with Blue Stripe, who got just nipped by Malathot.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Now, John, Rick Hammerly was talking about his favorite big cap, so I brought in the racing form from the 1987 big cap.
He's unbelievable.
Of course you did.
And I wrote the front page story on that. Not only that, Rick, but I called that chart at that time. In the early 80s, I was a reporter and columnist for the Racing Forum. And then starting in 1986, I was the chart caller. So this was the second Santa Anita handicap that I ever called. That Broadbrush eked out that nose win with Angel Cordero.
Well, John, I got to ask you, did you call the winner correctly?
I actually did, and usually the guys in the press box would look down at me to see who I called for the photo. I really had them in a tizzy in the press box at Hollywood Park once when I called a dead heat, and they were absolutely, they said, how can you possibly do that? Because I would call the finish. I was taught that by Bud Lyon. Bud Lyon of the Daily Racing Form was the guy that taught me how to, he was my mentor. And he was the national field supervisor.
Well, you know, it's not as quite as critical if you mess it up as a chart caller as it is as the announcer. But
well, where we would get the actual finish was from the photo finish people.
Sure.
The reason I called the finish was in case there was a failure, which would happen two or three times a year, where the photo finish people would say, "We don't have a finish for you," and I would have a finish. The other reason is that was the only way I could measure my calls in the margins and the accuracy against anything. All the other calls are my own, but I learned how to call large margins, 20, 25, 23, and it got to the point here in Southern California where the photo finish guy would call down to my call taker, and when she would get to the last horse and there was a big margin, he'd make her say first. And she'd say, well, John says 23. And he'd say, that's pretty good. It's 24. But see, you were able to, if you were too short, you'd keep that in mind for next time. If you were too long, you could keep sharp with your margins, particularly the big margins. There was a Hollywood Derby at Hollywood Park in the 1980s that was split into two divisions. And each division had 14 on the turf at a mile and an eighth. And in the second division, there was a power failure during the race. And they came down to and I called the horses. I had a finish, even because there was enough light from the tote board, barely, that I was able to come up with a margin for every horse in the race. After about 20 minutes, the placing judges called down to my call taker, and they said, well, it's taken us this long, but we figured out the first five to pay the purse. And she says, well, John has all 14 with margins. Are you interested? And they said, yeah, give it to us.
That's classic. You know, going back to this race I mentioned, the Broad Brush Ferdinand race, I went back and watched it last night on YouTube, and then I watched it again because I knew who won, but the first time I went by the wire there, I was like, oh my gosh, what's going on? They got it wrong, you know what I mean? And showed that. But I got to say, you know, watching Shoemaker ride all these years, I think one of the very few times he got fooled. Because, you know, he turns from home, and he's, you know, he's kind of knows, he knows exactly what he's got, but he's not letting the other guy know. And I think a few times in there, he thought he was just going to be able to scurry away, and Angel would not let him go. He just kept coming and coming and coming and just laid a nose on him right on the money.
Well, one of the reasons I, in the split second I had to make the call, I called Broadbrush by a nose, was because Cordero raised his, and I saw that. And I thought, well, he's got a better, all these thoughts are going through my mind in a split second. And I'm thinking, well, if he thinks he won, that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
That was the main reason. And in the press quotes afterwards, Cordero said after he saw the replay, he says, maybe I was a little hasty in raising my whip.
Yeah, because
and I thought, geez, Angel, maybe you were going to sell me down the river there with that call. And but now the thing about Ferdinand, Rick, he was a very tricky horse to ride. He had a tendency to pull himself up when he made the lead, big time. Buckpasser had that same trait. And Ferdinand, one time in one of the races in the Stroob Series, probably the San Fernando, I believe, and I love the Stroob Series. I'm so sorry we don't even have a Stroob Series anymore. But Ferdinand opened up, burst to the lead, had a big clear lead, and you would have bet, if you could have in-race betting, you would have bet the house, the car, and everything else on Ferdinand. He got nailed in the end by Variety Road, a Shell Cavalli horse in those orange
colors, I guess.
Orange and green.
Yeah.
And but see, it took time, but Shu learned it was very tricky to ride Ferdinand.
And you could see that. He was trying to dole him out, but not just at the right and time it right. And he just got nailed. And then later on, when he beat Ali Sheba, he was able to spurt ahead and hold Ali Sheba
off. All the hundreds of charts I called, and I've called charts at the tracks in the Pacific Northwest, on the Southern California circuit, Louisiana Downs, Keystone, for Tony Black. Yes, I was there when it was called Keystone. And all tracks all over the country, my favorite chart footnote I have with the comments I ever wrote was the 1987 Breeders' Cup Classic with the showdown of the two Kentucky Derby winners, Ferdinand and Ali Sheba. And the reason I'm proud of what I wrote on that, I tried my best to encapsulate Shoemaker, what he did, because Shoemaker, under the pressure of the richest race in the country, realizing this was probably his best and maybe final shot to win a Breeders' Cup Classic, put that on his resume, because he's in the twilight of his career, and he's riding you know, Ferdinand, who was on a roll at the time, but he's riding against McCarron and Ali Sheba, the three-year-old, who was the up-and-comer. And Shoemaker, if he makes one little mistake in that race, timing-wise, he loses because he wins by a nose. And Ali Sheba was flying and was going to go right by him. And, in fact, in the Santa Anita Handicap when they had the rematch, I bet Ali Sheba big because, to me, Ali Sheba probably should have won that Breeders' Cup Classic and was unfortunate to do it. But he was a three-year-old against an older horse. Hollywood at that time, it was pretty difficult to rally from as far back as Ali Sheba was that day. He had everything kind of going against him. And in the rematch, Ali Sheba beat Ferdinand, and I made pretty good money that day. But I really tried to encapsulate how Shoemaker, when you watch, go back to YouTube, and like you say, that's easy to go down a rabbit hole when you do that. And before you know it, it's 3 hours.
Yeah.
And but if you go to that 1987 Breeders' Cup Classic, and you want Shu in his hands, and he's in the upper stretch, and Judge Angelucci's got the lead, and he waits and waits and waits, and that, remember, they enlarged Hollywood Park.
It was a mile and eighth.
Mile and eighth track. And so that stretch was so long, and Shu's sitting there, because he knows if I blow by Judge Angelucci too soon, I'm going to get nailed, like Broadbrush. See, earlier in the year, this is where Shu had learned. And so he waits and waits, and they get to about the 16th pole. That late in the race, he finally asks Ferdinand. Ferdinand goes by Judge Angelucci, and here comes Ali Sheba. And, I mean, if Shu doesn't time that absolutely perfectly, he loses.
Right, he spurted just at the right time, and that was that call, the two Derby winners at the wire together, right?
Tom Durkin, that's right.
And one of his classic calls.
Tremendous calls. Listen, I remember in 1986, which was the first year I started calling charts for the form, switched over from writing, except for the Sunday feature races, they had me continue writing in Southern California. And Trevor called the early races, and then he says, ladies and gentlemen, and he introduced Durkin, and there was a huge chorus of boos here that they're booing Tom Durkin because Trevor by that time had already become so popular. And I've got to say, you talk about two of the absolute just tremendous announcers we've been lucky enough to have in this game. You go back and listen to those Durkin calls, and they're just priceless. I mean, they're fantastic. I mean, but Trevor as well. So, I mean, it's just, like I say, but I'll never forget, it's the only time I've ever heard an announcer booed at a racetrack before he even took the mic.
I don't remember that. The 86, that was a big deal. That was Lady Secret when I had to sign this Lady's No Secret in the winner's circle. And
I called that chart. And Franz Valentine ran second.
Franz Valentine. Well, Franz Valentine, what about Franz Valentine when he didn't, isn't that the one that got DQ'd?
Yes, I was there that day.
At 70-1 with P-Val on?
I was sitting next to Joe Hirsch in the press box for that inaugural Breeders' Cup at Hollywood Park. And Franz Valentine, they put the inquiry sign up right away. And I'll tell you what I thought the inquiry was. Gary Stevens, who had just started riding on this circuit full-time, got cut off on a filly from Washington, trained by Bob McMeans, who is... I was just telling Mark Glatt down here, he's on the ballot for the Washington Hall of Fame this year. And
Mark is, or is
Mark,
dad?
Mark is on the ballot. And along with Bob McMeans, who trained this filly, got you running it. She got Cordero cut her off leaving in the chute. But early in the race, almost dropped Stevens. And I saw that, and I thought that was the inquiry. But no, the inquiry was Fernando Toro getting cut off by Pat Valenzuela on Franz Valentine, and that was the first Breeders' Cup disqualification. Of course, then later in the card, we had the big disqualification in the Classic as well. One of my favorite memories of that Breeders' Cup, the Breeders' Cup sprint was won by Elo from the East, which is Ollie spelled backwards. And
Bud Lettman?
So I'm standing next to Hirsch, and Hirsch borrowed binoculars from a guy to watch the race. Now remember, there were two finish lines at Hollywood Park at that time when they enlarged it to a mile and an eighth. This wasn't the first Breeders' Cup race, so this is why this kind of took me by surprise. But as Elo was drawing away coming down to the stretch, he's coming to the finish line the first time, and Hirsch stands up from his chair with his binoculars and he goes, brilliant, outstanding, tremendous, fantastic. and they hit the first finish line, and he sits down and he starts to type, and the horses continue on to the second finish line. And Hirsch looks at me and he goes, "What the hell?" And I said, and just then they hit the finish, and it's a photo. And he says, Hirsch puts his arms out like, "Who won?" And I said, "I think he held on, Joe." And Elo did hold on. And unfortunately died right after that. They sent him to the Chino Clinic, and I was having to cover that as a reporter for the Racing Forum and had to call that trainer practically every day to get an update. Very sadly, he ended up dying.
You know, interestingly enough, in that Breeders' Cup in 1984, I think they had just reconfigured that track the year before. Remember, they put the pavilion up that was
kind of
facing the wrong way everything.
Yep.
And I was living up in San Francisco at the time, or in the Bay Area, and I remember calling my dad and saying, "Hey, Dad, do what you can, you know, send in for some tickets or some Breeders' Cup tickets and whatever." So we got the tickets. We came down. We got to our seats. I remember taking the train. It's hard to take a train from San Francisco to L.A., but you can do it. So we got here. We get to the track. I've been to Hollywood Park, you know, 100 times. And we got our seats, and I'm going, we're a little bit past the finish line here, but it's probably not bad. And they, you know, having a few cocktails, getting ready for the day, and boom, 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 and here comes the first race, and, you know, Chief's Crown's, you know, coming down the thing, and I'm...
Which was kind of weird about that. It was 11 o'clock in the morning.
It was early, so, you know, probably having a Bloody Mary. but they were coming down the lane, and we're going, okay, who won that? I'm not real sure, and they kept running, and they kept running, and they kept running, and all of a sudden, they ended, and I was like, oh my gosh, we were right on the finish line. The NBC camera was right over us, so we ended up, I thought our seats were terrible, they ended up being fantastic, and especially for the you know, the end of the race at the end of the day, when, you know, Wild Again comes, I was like, oh my gosh, we had the best seats in the house, incredible. I wish, you know, we didn't have iPhones then, but you know, it's still locked in my mind, and I remember my buddies going, "Man, how'd you get these seats?" I go, "I don't know."
But
we were right there, and but it kind of changed Hollywood Park. It wasn't the same.
Nope.
You know, it just, you
yes,
know.
It did.
Right?
Yes, it did. I saw a number of jockeys misjudge that with the two finish lines, including Pinkai, among others.
Yeah, we didn't.
But the only journalist I ever saw do it was Joe Hirsch that day.
That's a classic.
Who was another mentor of mine. I mean, I got to meet him at the first Super Derby at Louisiana Downs in 1980, which... At that time, that was the richest three-year-old race in the world, $500,000. So, in fact, Randy Moss was working in publicity at Louisiana Downs there, and I met Randy, and we looked at the stakes schedule before the start of the meet, and I said, "Man, this is a fantastic stakes schedule, but there's one category missing a big race, and that's a Derby." And just then, I mean, it was kind of weird. This is your karma again, and so forth. But the publicity director said, "The general manager wants to see you in his office." So I went to his office, and Louisiana Downs had a turf course that year. The Sawyer Turf Course opened, and the nearest turf course was Arlington Park, because there was no racing in Texas. Kentucky didn't have any turf course. There was nothing in that whole area till Louisiana Downs. Fairgrounds didn't have one. So that was a big deal. And I thought he was going to talk about that. And he goes, "Close the door." So I closed the door, and he goes, "You've been around the country. I'm kind of interested to get your thoughts on this. I'm wondering if we'll get laughed out of racing." And I'm thinking, what is he talking about? And he says, "This isn't official yet, so don't write it. But," he says, "we're thinking of putting on a $500,000 race in November, scale weight, a mile and a quarter. We'll call it the Super Derby. And we plan to get on ABC, CBS, or NBC." Back then, that was it. And I'm thinking to myself, you got no chance at Louisiana. No way you're getting on it. But I didn't say that to him because I thought, who knows, maybe he can do it. Well, he didn't. He didn't get on national TV. But I said, "Mr. Bartimo," he says, "so what do you think?" I said, "Mr. Bartimo, there's good news and bad news." He says, "What's the good news?" And I said, "What's the bad news?" And I said, "The bad news is you won't be graded for the first 2 years. And that's an important thing to the type of horse you want to get, a spectacular bid and a firm. Those horses are going to stay for the Marlboro Cup, the Woodward, and the Jockey Club Gold Cup. Because that's horse of the year implications, stud implications." He says, "But it's $500,000. It'll be graded." I said, "Mr. Bartimo, it will not be graded." And it was not graded till its third edition. He says, "What's the good news?" I said, "There's really no major race past the Travers on the calendar." I said, "Other than a spectacular bid type horse, like the next notch below, I think you got a really good chance to get. And Louisiana Downs for the first one got Temperance Hill coming off a win in the Jockey Club Gold Cup against John Henry. He beat John Henry to win that race. Earlier in the year, he had won the Belmont Stakes in the mud, beating Genuine Risk. And he won the, you know, he won the Travers. I mean, he had a heck of a year that year for Joe Canty, who I met at that first Super Derby. I met Shoemaker. I met Laz Barrera, who said, "I'll put in a good word for you for the racing form for you to go to Southern California." And he did, and he never told me about that. And, I mean, because when I was sent to Keystone the first day, they said, call the national editor in Hightstown, New Jersey, Fred Grossman. And I called him. And I said, "Mr. Grossman, John White at Keystone." And he says, "John, welcome to the Northeast. We think you're going to do a great job. And by the way, somebody's put in a really, really, really good word for you." And I said, "Who's that?" And he said, "Laz Barrera." And I said, "Wow." And he never told me that. And so in a way, because I met my wife in Southern California, I always feel Laz Barrera played a big key in me meeting my eventual wife. But
that's a great story.
But that. You know, Super Derby was huge getting it off the ground.
And Ali Sheba won a Super Derby.
Sunday Silence. I mean, it was a big... The Pennsylvania Derby now is what the Super Derby once was.
Right.
And they've come in, they've stepped up, put up $1 million, and Louisiana Downs has just let the race slip.
Well, there's not a whole lot going on back there for a lot of stuff. So, let me ask you this. You brought a stack of forms here, and you've seen a lot of... Forget the racing form. Forget working as a fan. What is a couple of your biggest memories of watching a big cap?
Well, the biggest would be the first one, because that was such a thrill. That was 1982, because I came to Southern California in April of 1981.
Was that a John Henry?
Yes, and it was his second one, and it was the disqualification of Perot, and that was so controversial. And, I mean, you can really make a case. Honestly, they didn't make contact. I mean, we're still arguing about this to this day, when horses don't make contact. And, you know, and believe me, I've been in the steward's chair to make some of these decisions, and it's not enviable. But that was such a huge deal, because John Henry became the first two-time winner of the prestigious Santa Anita Handicap. And, see, I had come to Southern California in April 1981. I met my wife on May 17th, 1981.
John, to the day.
Well, I've given my wife a greeting card, every month since May 17th, 1981. Starting in June of 1981, she got her card this month. In February, on the 17th.
That is.
So I know that day.
You don't pay the mailman to just drop it in there every month?
Well, the bad thing is the greeting cards have gotten very expensive compared to when I was buying them in the 1980s and 1990s and so forth. But and the reason I mark that date and wanted to celebrate it every month is because that's more important to me than when we got married 2 years later in November of 1983. Where did we get married? I'll point to the church. It's right over here, the Santa Anita Church, which this past year, after I made a big score on the Wild Grazer, I took my wife to the Derby restaurant for a dinner that the Wild Grazer paid for. But on the way to the Derby restaurant, we stopped at the church that we had been married in 40 years ago. And it was all locked up and everything. But I took some pictures. You know, you could actually look through the door and see the whole... where we stood to get married and everything. And but that the reason I celebrate the 17th of every month is that's more important to me than the day we got married, because if we hadn't met, we wouldn't have never gotten married.
Well, there you go.
That's the important date to me. And by the way, Randy Moss, when I kept telling him I want to end up in Southern California. And so when I called him and told him the racing form has promoted me to Southern California, he says, "I have met a girl at the Kentucky Derby that I think you two would hit it off like you can't believe." And I said, "Really?" And he says, "Yeah, her name's Tracy Gantz, and she works for the Thoroughbred of California magazine." He's the editor of the magazine. And he says, "I swear, you two guys..." So I've always said Randy Moss is not only a great horse handicapper, he's a great human handicapper.
That is classic. And I do talk about being here for a lot of these in the infield, and I do remember being out there. And that back in those days, they didn't show the replays, all that stuff. You saw the race once, and you had to, what happened there? And
that's right.
It was a long time, and it was a big deal, obviously, what happened, which leads us to the Wicked North situation.
Oh, I was working in Santa Anita TV then, and Kurt Hoover and I were at the winner's circle, and they were throwing debris at that call. And Pete Peterson was another mentor of mine. He was one of the three stewards for that. And I certainly disagreed with the call.
Yeah,
it was just a blown call. I mean, let's face it, 99.9% of the world will say that. And it's so sad for Dave Bernstein is such a good guy, such a good trainer, never has really gotten, able to get a lot of stock and everything. And that, and the owner was a nice guy. And
I don't think they ever got over it.
No, I agree.
This whole time here. It
just kind of pulled the rug out from him, quite frankly. So
absolutely. I just, I was not here for that. Of course, I've seen the replays and everything else. But
by the way, your favorite Santa Anita handicap that Broad Brush eked out the nose win over Ferdinand, if you look in that form, look who's running in the final race that day. A name's going to jump out at you in the final race for three-year-olds.
A horse, let's see, Ali Sheba?
Yeah. Ali Sheba's in an allowance race. And Pat Day, his only mount that day was to come in and ride Ali Sheba. Now, Ali Sheba, I saw a run for the first time at Hollywood Park in his career debut, and they were telling me for weeks, they got this $500,000 Ali Dar colt that is a monster. And so I bet $100 on him in his career debut, and he ran horrible. And so I'm thinking, talk about hyped and overhyped and everything. So then that year, which was 1986, my wife says, you need to go to Kentucky to see Secretariat before he dies. So we take a vacation to Kentucky. I have a picture of me standing with Secretariat. On that trip, we went to Turfway Park for the In Memoriam Stakes. And guess who's in the race? None other than Ali Sheba. So Ali Sheba is in this race, and I'm having a bad day, and I got like $20 left is all, and I bet it on Ali Sheba. He takes the lead turning for home, and I said to my wife, I'll take it from here. And he gets nailed by a horse from Calder, just nails him right at the end. And I turned around in disgust and said to my wife, I'll bet he wins the Kentucky Derby next year. And I said it just, in disgust. Well, my wife was at the Kentucky Derby the next year and called me at home and said, remember that horse we saw at Turfway in the In Memoriam Stakes that you said would win the Derby? And I said, oh, yeah, I forgot I said he'd win the Derby. He just won the Derby. So that was Ali Sheba. But this day, before he gets to the Kentucky Derby, Pat Day comes out, my teletype, this is how old I am. No, not my computer operator, my teletype operator. Gail Dunbar, wonderful man. He says, are you sure this guy has come to Santa Anita to ride one race, the final race on the card? And I...
No, he just said he got beat.
Yeah. He was a number two, but he won the Bluegrass but got DQ'd. But this horse that beat him was a horse from Calder. He chipped in from Calder to beat him. So this race was run in the dark. Let me tell you. Now, if they have video or film of this, it doesn't look that dark, because a lot of times the TV, it doesn't show how dark. I could barely see these horses and to call that chart. But I just remember my teletype operator questioned me all day long. He kept saying, are you sure Pat Day is here to ride an allowance race? I mean, he just kept questioning that. So, and then I called Ali Sheba. My first Breeders' Cup actual race I ever called was the Breeders' Cup Juvenile of 1986 that was won by Capote, who I would predicted for D. Wayne Lucas would win on local television. Channel 56 had a weekly racing show, and I predicted Capote. That was my best bet at the Breeders' Cup was Capote, and Ali Sheba came flying and finished third that day. So a lot of memories for Ali Sheba there. But you said a couple of big cat memories. 1984, John Henry, we have that for him here. He's the big headline. That's the year he's Horse of the Year. 1984, the year of the first Breeders' Cup. And John Henry is the big story because he's trying to become a three-time Santa Anita Handicap winner.
and he's running against a horse called Intergoat, trained by Ted West. And I'm at West's barn to cover his final workout with Pat Valenzuela aboard, and P-Val's late. And we're standing there, and West is getting mad. And he says, if he's not here in the next, like, 10 minutes, we're going to put an exercise rider on this horse, and he's not riding this horse in the Santa Anita Handicap. I mean, and the clock is ticking, and we're waiting and waiting. So Ted West tells this brief story while we're waiting for P-Val, and he says, he's going to blow this mount like Jerry Lambert did back in the 60s. Jerry Lambert was going to ride an odds-on horse at 100 grander in the 60s, which was a big deal in the 60s. And the trainer said, and Lambert had a reputation for not showing up for a workout. Hmm. And he said, if he doesn't show up for this work, he's not riding him. And the agent says, Pat McDowell says, I promise I'm going to go to his house and make sure he gets there for the work. He says, okay. So Pat McDowell drives to Jerry Lambert's house at like 5 o'clock in the morning, goes in, gets him out of bed, puts him in the shower. Now here's where Pat McDowell made his big mistake. He put him in his car, and he got in his car. Pat McDowell drives to the track, and there's no Jerry Lambert. And he blew them out. They didn't work the horse, and the guy stuck to his word. So Pat McDowell drives back to Jerry Lambert's house, and he's back in bed. He goes, Jerry, what are you doing? He says, you just blew 100 grander. Why? Jerry says, my hair hurt.
Rough night.
My hair hurt. I'm laughing. And here comes P-Val right then. And P-Val, hey, good morning. Hey, everybody. And P-Val works him. And Interco wins the big cap and drills John Henry, who finished fourth behind Journey at Sea. Gato del Sol was third. And John Henry was fourth.
Well, you mentioned that Intrico, and he either went off at 5-1 or 10-1.
Pretty good price.
It was one of those.
And he was coming out of the Scroob Series. He was the good 4-year-old.
And P-Val was just kind of making a name for himself. I mean, he might have had a couple good years, but I think this was it. And I was here. I think I was here with Gina. We weren't married yet, and she became a P-Val fan for whatever.
Because he won a lot of races.
Because he won a lot of races. But I mean, it's like, you know, Patrick. We just call him Patrick. Who do you like, Patrick? And I remember we bet on him that day, and I think this was that race that just kind of said, you know what, let's see if he can keep the roll going, and he won, and I, you know.
And he came back. In those days, oftentimes the big cap winner and or vanquished would come back on the turf in the San Luis Rey. And John Henry and Interco had a rematch in the San Luis Rey, and Interco drilled him again.
Yeah, he was, like you said, you mentioned the Ted West. He was that horse was absolutely on a roll, obviously.
He got hurt in the mid-season, and despite the fact of drilling John Henry twice, John Henry went on the second half of the season, and he became the first and I think only we'll ever see 9-year-old horse of the year.
Was that the year he went back to the Meadowlands and won the Meadowlands race?
Yeah.
The Ballantine Classic?
That was his final career start with McGarry. He came from way back that day.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing being able to talk about these races from 40 years ago. Like, you remember them like they were yesterday, but they were just, there wasn't TV. You had to be here to see it. And
that's
so
right.
When you see stuff, it just really just clicks. And I mean, I remember those days. I remember who I was with and what I was doing. One of those things. So you mentioned a couple of them, and you know, I went through half a dozen that I remember.
I'll give you one that you guys probably have a better recollection than I do, because I became a fan of the horse, you know, after actually he was long gone as a retiree. But Bates Motel winning this. And Gosden, it, no one ever discusses him.
Well, you're right, because that was the second one I ever saw. And
Yellow Gold Silks.
Well, yeah, because it was Michael Reardon and another partner. And he was like a tank. He was like over 17 hands. I mean, the job that John Gosden did. And listen to the writer of that race.
Was it?
Who wrote
it?
Terry Lipham.
That's right.
Yeah.
Terry Lipham. How many jockeys ever won a 440-yard All-American Futurity and a mile and a quarter Santa Anita Handicap? That's Terry Lipham. So we'll turn to that because I happen
That's
to...
That's very cool, actually.
Right?
I mean, it really is.
That was what, 80, was that 85 or 86?
83.
83. And it was in that.
A field of 17.
Yeah, how about that?
Laz Barrera finished second with It's the One. Wavering Monarch was third. Exploded was fourth. Danibo, that was Barrera. Barrera's second and fifth in that race.
With the filly.
Swing Till Dawn, that was Chuck Marikian, the gray horse.
Swing Till Dawn was Daryl Vienna.
No, that Swing Till Dawn was Chuck Marikian.
Okay, who am I thinking of with that Daryl Vienna horse? A little bit later in the 80s, won the Washington D.C. International.
Yeah. The Swing Till Dawn went to Florida and won a big race, the Widener, for Chuck Marikian. Sang for Henry Moreno, the filly.
Jelly.
Waterbank was Ron McAnally. Major Sport, Victory Zone, 38 paces, exclusive one. The Wonder was the favorite in the race. Caterman was Lou Carno.
That was a nice horse,
yes,
Caterman.
He was.
One of my favorite horses during
that
era.
Well, he finished first in a Hollywood Gold Cup and got disqualified.
Yeah, great turf horse.
Yeah, but he won the Hollywood Gold Cup, and Gary Jones was on suspension, and Don Luby won a Hollywood Gold Cup there with eight stitches.
Eight stitches, named after a surgeon, I believe, right? Eight stitches? I remember that
like
horse.
Dr. Fager. Talking about horses named after a surgeon. But that's, that is a good one. Because that horse, now here's one of my fondest memories. I had a source. Back then, the Eclipse Awards were not announced at the dinner. They came out before that, except Horse of the Year. And I had a source that told me that year that Bates Motel was going to get the Eclipse Award as older male. And Chinook Pass, the only Washington bred to win an Eclipse Award, so it meant a lot to me. He was going to get Sprinter, and it wasn't male Sprinter, it was Sprinter. They just had Sprinter then. And so that morning, I was able to go out here at Santa Anita to the barn area, and I went to Laurie Anderson's barn and said, I found out Chinook Pass has got the Eclipse Award. And he was all excited and everything, of course. Then I went over to Gosden's barn, and Gosden was standing with a clipboard. And I said, good morning, John. And he says, good morning, John. And I said, he looks at me, he says, how is everything? And I said, I know something you don't know. And he looked up from his clipboard and he goes, is it what I think it is? And I said, yes, it's what you think it is. And he says, how wonderful is that? So what a thrill for me to be able to tell the guy that Bates Motel was going to get the Eclipse Award that year.
That's very cool. Well,
we're one mic short, so we're passing it back. I have one question here for John. Okay, you remember back in this time period, Steve Cawthon came over to ride here for a little bit.
Yep.
And he went on a long losing streak.
Huge.
Do you remember the horse that broke his losing streak that he won on?
I certainly don't, but that losing streak got brought up with the Pratt. How Pratt got off to such a slow start at this meet.
Well, the name of the horse was Father Duffy.
Oh, yeah.
I just happened to be here that day, and I'm amazed that I actually got something over on John, because that's a John thing. And I don't know why I always remembered that, but I think it was like 100.
Oh, it was long. Well, it cost him the mount on a firm.
And yes, and Lafitte. But and it's remember being
Lafitte won the Santa Anita Derby on a firm because Cawthon was on suspension. That's before they had this to where you could ride these stakes. That were designated stakes races. So Cawthon missed that mount, that of course won the Triple Crown. But when Cawthon went through the slump, they went back to Pink Eye. I'll be honest, I always thought Pink Eye fit a firm better, because a firm was kind of Ferdinandish. He was game, but he kind of liked to, I think he responded better to the stronger handling of Pink Eye, honestly. And if you look at the record between the two riders, I think that kind of shows that to be the case. But Cawthon, listen, the first time I ever heard of Steve Cawthon, I'm working at Louisiana Downs in 1976. My call taker was John Battaglia Jr. And they bring us our racing forms for the next day at Louisiana Downs. And on the front, they got a picture of this kid riding at River Downs. The kid looks like he's 12. And I said, I started laughing, and Battaglia says, what's so funny? And I said, when did they start letting 12-year-old kids ride? He says, let me tell you something. Don't laugh. And I'm thinking, what? He goes, don't laugh. This kid, before he's done, will be one of the greatest jockeys of all time. Okay. And I said, what's he doing at River Downs? He says, he's just starting.
Got to start somewhere.
And he says, you follow him. I promise. So I did. And he, you know where he went to after River Downs? Hawthorne. And then he went to Keeneland. And then he went to New York that winter. And with Lenny Goodman, they set the world on fire that year. And, of course, the rest is history with Steve Cotham, what he did. One of my favorite Cotham memories, when I was calling charts up and writing at Longacres for the Longacres drinking game people, for Longacres to get brought up today, Exhibition Park, which is now Hastings Racecourse, which interestingly it started off as Hastings, went to Exhibition Park, and then became Hastings again.
I saw it. I visited when it was Exhibition.
So
that period.
I go up there for the Monday opening because Longacres raced Wednesday through Sunday. So what do you do on your day off? We drive up, and my call taker and I drive up to Exhibition Park because Cawthon came in to ride. He had five mounts at Exhibition Park on opening night. And it was one of the best gambling nights of my life because they overbet those Cotham horses like crazy. And the leading rider at Exhibition Park was a guy that rode down here some. He was a good rider, Ken Skinner. And Kenny Skinner, I won like three good bets on him on overpriced horses because they're overbetting Cotham. Cotham finally won his last mount. But that was one of the memorable days for me watching Steve Cotham. So then I get to Playfair that year, and I asked the general manager, have you ever thought of bringing Cawthon in here? And he said, nah, he says, we don't really want to do it. So I was disappointed because I was trying to talk the guy. I was like a Rick Hammerly trying to, I thought, what a great promotion. He did it. So whatever Exhibition Park did, why don't you do it? And he wouldn't do it.
Kenny Skinner had a 6-win.
Yeah, Ken Skinner could ride.
Yeah, won 1,000 races, Kenny Skinner.
Yeah, he was a good rider. Well, he also rode a horse for me that's an infamy in my life. The 1973 Longacres Mile, I bet my first quarter college tuition on a horse called on a horse called Briartic. And he came out of post 8. And the Longacres Mile was first run in 1935. This is 1973, and there never been a winner out of post 8. They called it the post 8 hex. And I said, I'll show them. I'll bet my college tuition. And Eddie Belmonte was supposed to come in from Saratoga to ride the horse. And he pulled a P-Val and didn't show up. So Ken Skinner got the mount. And I said, I don't care. You could put anybody on this horse. He's going to win. He got beat a nose in the race the year before. And that's kind of funny because he was running at Woodbine and run right there with Kennedy Road at Woodbine. And as a lark, they nominated him to the Longacres Mile, and they gave him like 112 pounds. And this horse is right there with Kennedy Road, and these guys looked at that and said, they obviously don't know how good this horse is. They sent him from Woodbine to Longacres for the mile, and he got parked, went out in the parking lot turning for home and got beat a nose by Redwind, the local horse, with Richard Tex Hollingsworth. So now we're sitting there in the next year, and I said, Briartic, who had won the Lakes and Flowers Handicap at Hollywood Park. I mean, he was coming in with great Southern California form. He was a really good horse. So he comes in, and he just is dull. He ran like Cyclone Mischief dead last time out. That's how Briartic, with my college tuition. So now I'm thinking, now what am I going to do?
So
well,
great.
The next... That was a week before Labor Day weekend. So on the Sunday of Labor Day weekend, I go out to Playfair. I had $20. I took the 20 and ran it into 120. I had 7 out of 10 races. I bet the winner that day and built up $20 into 120. So now I'm looking at Labor Day at Longacres, and that Table Run's running against Silver Mallet, who had won that Longacres Mile for Jim Penny, and Silver Mallet had run third to Riva Ridge back east. And Silver Mallet, this Table Run had run second to Sham right here at Santa Anita. And so I'm going to bet Table Run, and I like other horses on the card. I like the card, and I'm thinking, so I
I'm washing my car, my 63 Ford Galaxy, to drive to Long Acres the next day. My mom says, why are you washing your car? I said, I'm going to go to Long. She says, I don't want to hear it. I don't even know. I don't want to get involved. So I drive the 276 miles from my porch to Long Acres. I bet seven more winners that day, capped off by table run in the Seattle Handicap that he won and beat Silver Mallet. Turbulator was in that race, by the way, but he was at the twilight of his career. He was in his next last year. He actually beat the Long Acres Mile winner in that race. And he was washed up at that time, and he beat the Long Acres Mile winner who had run third to Riva Ridge. So anyway, I got my college tuition back. Well, my dad got wind of this, and so he suspended me for a day from Playfair. I got a one-day suspension from going to Playfair because I had bet my college tuition before I got it all back.
Well, this is like out of The Flamingo Kid with what's the athlete who's going to go to Notre Dame and they blow the money at Roosevelt. Sounds the same. And then Matt Dillon's got to win it back in the rummy game.
Well, the other one was that
gin, Phil.
That same year in May, I was dying. I was working at a golf course while going to high school, and then my first year of college, so I couldn't stand Long Acres. It was opening week, and I was afraid of heights. I didn't even like sitting in bleachers at a basketball game, but I got on a plane and flew to Seattle and walked to the track from the airport. From SeaTac, I walked to Long Acres. I bet Coco's Pal that day in the Boeing Stakes with Gary Bays aboard, and I left a note for my parents on my bed telling them what I was going to do. I'm a senior in high school, and I'm flying to Long Acres. I took a shuttle from the track to downtown and then caught the Greyhound bus back because I didn't know whether I would like flying or not. So I get home, and my parents are going, oh, man, we were so worried about you. This is so out of character for you to do something like this. And they're chewing me out, and then after about 5 minutes, my dad goes, this is great. Next week, you should fly over, and I'll pick you up at the airport. My mom threw up her hands and said, I give up. That's the last straw. And this is, my wife says, if I was your mother, I would have killed your father.
John, I got to ask you, before I forget, about, I don't know if you, did you hear Clinton Stewart the other day with me?
Yes.
They talked about Black Mackey?
Black Mackey, absolutely. In fact, oh, I was going to bring those forms out. he was a tremendous horse. He won the Spokane Futurity by 10 and tied the track record as a two-year-old. Then he came back a week later and won the Juvenile Mile carrying 127 pounds as a two-year-old. I mean, this horse was a flat runner. He got hurt and was off 2 years and came back and won his first race back at Yakima Meadows. I mean, he was by Captain Courageous, who was a sailor stallion, and he went to Montana and sired a flock of stakes winners, as he said.
That's what Clinton told the story. I wasn't familiar with it at all.
If you look at the list of all-time stakes winning, stakes winners for sires, he's like on the list. And I mean, he was a freak horse. I mean, he was very, very. He's the type of horse in the Northwest, like a Chinook Pass, that could come to Southern California. He would have done well. There's no question about it. So, one other thing we got to quickly say, because somebody contacted you about this, Bill Gar.
Oh, that's right. Go ahead. We got about 4 minutes.
Well, Bill Gar was an institution. He was a legend here. Before we had our phones and everything that we could get results, KIEB, and Bill Gar would call the feature race, and he also each week had an hour-long talk show that I was a frequent guest on, and I also was his guest for the feature race a lot of times. Frank Miramonte almost killed me one day. I'm driving in to HRTV from my home, and I'm right up here near Santa Anita, and Frank's on with Mike Willman, and Bill Gar gets brought up, and Frank called this race just like Bill Gar would call a race a lot, because I can remember sitting in a supermarket parking lot with my transistor radio listening to Bill Gar. I had a big bet. Now, let's say I got a big bet on Secretariat. So now here's how Bill Gar would call it. And into the stretch, it's Seattle Slough by a head. Affirmed is second on the outside. It's Seattle Slough under hand, boot, and whip. Affirmed is second on the outside. It's affirmed. It's Seattle Slough. It's affirmed in Seattle Slough. And it's Secretariat by five.
I was just going to say that. The hand, boot, and whip was the classic. But when you listen to Bill Gar, right, KIV was 87 on the radio.
870, yeah.
Right? I remember, so you pull over at like 514 on the radio every time. You never wanted to hear your horse. I don't know. I mean, Trevor was never in trouble with Bill Gard taking over his spot.
That's for
but
sure.
You think every single horse made this closing run, and then you watched the replay, or you see
the Secretariat went wire to wire.
You see the chart. Yeah, the guy was in front the whole way. It was unbelievable. You just never wanted to hear your horse.
But I'm telling you, I'm driving in. It's like 8 in the morning. On a Sunday, and I'm listening to Wilma's show, and Frank could do it better than me. We know how great he is. Yeah. And he does this Bill Gar.
Oh,
and I swear, I came within a fraction of driving into the ditch off of the road. I was laughing so hard because Frank nailed it so perfectly.
I don't know what it was, but it was your only recourse.
It was your only recourse.
And that KNX would give you the results on the half hour, on the 15
That's
and the 45.
Right.
You could get a result.
And for Los Alamitos, too, because when I grew up, KNX came into Spokane, Washington, clear as a bell, as did KFI.
Yeah.
I grew up listening to the Dodgers and to the Lakers on those 50,000-watt stations. So I grew up as a Chick Hearn fan and a Vin Scully fan. In fact, my nickname in junior high school and high school was Chick, because I would put out each day the Chick News, which was a little sports blurb that in typing class I would sit there. And, of course, there was a lot of horse racing on that. In fact, in my high school, on March 22nd, 1973, I wrote, going out on a limb and living dangerously, I dare say 1973 will be a historic year. A Secretariat will become the first Triple Crown winner since the Great Citation in 1948. That's in my high school paper in 1973, March 22nd.
Did you bring that?
No, but it's on my phone.
It's in file. It's in the file. You can count on that. And just for the record here, since Steve has mentioned the sun, I think it started snowing up in the mountains here.
Really?
Again.
Yeah. I mean, weather may you stick with the broadcasting. Jeez, sun, crazy.
Too much fun.
John White, everybody, and Hammer, Mike McCaskey was with us as well, and Michael W. McCarthy, Fun, and Mig. In fact, Mig is listening, and Mig sent a text when Father Duffy came up. Mig rubbed him on the farm. How funny is, look at this, sports, you gotta take a picture of that and send that to me. John White, everybody, post time John. Fun first day. We got lots to do, obviously, as the week unfolds from here at Santa Anita. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9 on SiriusXM. Back with you at 9 here at the Great Race Place. Archive podcast later. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your